We got the legendary Talib Kweli joining me here for Sports and Hip Hop with DJ Mad Max, Live 365, iHeartRadio, one of the illest MCs of all time, host of the People's Party podcast. You already know what it is, activist. He's done it all in hip hop, and he's on his way to achieve so much more great things in this industry. We got the one and only Talib Kweli. Welcome to the show, man. How's it
Peace.
going?
I'm pretty good. I'm in New York. I don't get to spend as much time in New York as I used to, so I'm enjoying my city, and it's all good.
Yep, Liberation 2, it's out on DSPs now. I know you've had it on Luminary, but now it finally hit the DSPs. Why was it now the right time for it to finally drop on DSPs? Because I know you're big on the Luminary and getting paid what you're worth.
That's a great question. Thank you for asking about that. So Luminary was, I'm not on Luminary anymore. People's Party was on Luminary. Midnight Miracle. I'm still on Luminary and Midnight Miracle. If Dave ever decides to get back in the lab and do more episodes, we still gonna drop that with Luminary. We dropped the Black Star album exclusively on Luminary, Black Star Madlib. We dropped Liberation 2, me and Madlib exclusive on Luminary. And it's crazy because shout out to the folks at Luminary because for the privilege of having these projects exclusively on their platform, they paid us. And because they paid us, we didn't have to like be out here like begging people to support us. We didn't have to be out here like, please buy the album, please buy the album. And that's not always as fun as people might think it is. We got a lot of pushback, a lot of people, particularly with the Black Star album, because the fans want it so bad and Luminary was like a new situation for them. So we got a lot of pushback from people who were like, why can't you put it on DSPs? Why are you doing this? And the answer is because, well, we got paid to do it. And we do this for a living. We all have families out here. And so while me as a fan, I appreciate fans want to have access to everything like at the at as soon as they want it in places where they're used to having it. I think the true fan realizes that artists have to make decisions that make sense for their families. So, with that said, I'd like to thank everybody who has supported me on Luminary, who supported the Black Star album on Luminary, who supported Midnight Miracle on Luminary, who supported Liberation 2 on Luminary. But now that exclusive period is up. So, while Black Star is still not available on the DSPs because my partner Yasiin Bey, he's very much against the DSPs for good reason. Liberation 2 just dropped on the DSPs because me and Madlib wanted to get that out to the people.
Yeah, and it's one hell of an album. It's a long time coming here because I remember the first one. It really touched you because you were working with your kids, and you get to work with your kids after these messages. Your son's on the record with you. Are you looking to do a collaborative album with him, actually? Because that would be pretty dope. Because when you look at it, you have you and then your son. It would be like the first MC to have an album with his kid.
My son and my daughter, Amani Faylon, Diani Asher, are both on this project. I was thinking about doing a project called Respect the Greens, which me and the kids, that would be dope. But my children, they're on this project because the project demanded it. There's not really any nepotism going on. It's like my children have forged their own artistic paths, and we just converged at this point. So shout out to Diani, who had just had a baby. I'm a grandfather
Oh,
now. She just
congratulations.
dropped, yes, indeed. She just dropped a project called Dion, which is named after my grandson. Go on the DSP and listen to that. She just dropped a video for the Pam Grier. Amani Fela, of course, is my son. He's running around New York City doing all types of fly events. And both of them got bars.
Oh, they do. And you raised two great kids, and they really are paving their own lane for themselves. And I can't wait to see what you
Thank
got
you.
coming on the way for
Thank
them, of
you.
course. And after these messages, there's something that's deep with this, because when you said we used to hang on trees, now they hang on our every word. It's when I observe that bar and I look at it, I'm like, man, because hip hop is deep and it's brought all races together. But there's also, like, when you look at it, do you feel as though that white people who are racist like it sometimes, not when it comes to the Afrocentric and the political side, but do you think that white people love hip hop as when we're talking about racist white people, because it depicts the destruction of the black community, because you have a lot of violence in hip hop at times when we hear it in the music, and because you hear the N-word and that they can say it, maybe not out loud, but in their rooms at home. Do you think is that kind of Have you thought about that before? And that does that lyric kind of touch on what I'm trying to ask you with that question?
I don't think it's that I don't think it's that dastardly. I don't think people are like, I like hip hop because it's destroying the black community. I don't think it's like that. Racism is not logical. It's not a logical pursuit. It's not a logical train of thought. If racist people employed logic in their thinking, they would stop being racist because they'd be like, yo, this don't make no sense. So sometimes the mistake we make as a society is expecting racist people to operate in a logical fashion. And so because racism at its core is illogical, racists who hate black people will still have a favorite black rapper or a favorite black actor or a favorite black athlete. And Spike Lee talked about it in Do the Right Thing when his character Mookie confronted John Turturro's character, and he's like, you don't like Michael Jordan, you don't like Prince. He's like, oh, those I don't. He said, I don't look at them as black. He had to like separate them from everybody just to justify how much he appreciates those artists and athletes and stuff. And I think that hip hop for a racist white person can often become a voyeuristic thing. It paints a picture of a world that they're not privy to. Hip hop at its core is about participation and skill, so race. Of course, hip hop culture started with black and brown people in New York City and the Bronx, but just because a black and brown, and there were white people there too, but just because it was predominantly black and brown when it started doesn't mean it's a race-based thing. It's not. It's a skill participation-based thing. So when I see someone like Tom McDonald, right? Tom McDonald is a white artist who I found out after I was critical of him that he had songs bigging me up. So salute to Tom McDonald for bigging me up, and I'm still gonna get at you for the nonsense you be putting out there. He is, I feel like Tom McDonald, he had the number one hip hop song in the country for a while. I think last week he had another number one, but it didn't make as much noise because he didn't have Ben Shapiro on it. But the song he had with Ben Shapiro on, Facts, in retrospect, I feel like an artist like Tom McDonald is sincere in his attempt to participate in hip hop. But because of his upbringing, because of where he's from, and because he's been sold a version of hip hop from the mainstream that's only about sex and violence, he thinks that that's what hip hop is about. And so in his journey, he talks about starting out being a hip hop artist, rhyming about partying, rhyming about sex, violence, and I get that, right? Because a lot of people are weak minded, and a lot of people allow society to dictate to them what they should be doing as an artist. I've never had that issue, so it's hard for me to relate to someone who says, "Oh, I was influenced by hip hop," because you know what I'm saying. I'm like, not nah, not nah, I. It's hard for me to relate, but I understand, right? So when I hear someone like him, what you described. The racist who listen to hip hop because they want to hear those negative things, those are the people. That's not Tom McDonald, but those are the Tom McDonald fans. You know what I'm saying? The people who like Tom McDonald, they're like, oh, he's talking about how hip hop shouldn't be this and hip hop shouldn't be that. They not hip hop fans. He's making hip hop for people who don't like hip hop.
Yeah, and that's a dangerous territory because you see the, and they're the MAGA rappers, and there's been this whole trend of them since Donald Trump has gotten into politics, and it's really toxic to see how that's really come about. But when you got air quotes on there, because that's my favorite record off of the album,
Thank you.
and you're of course, and you're calling out a rappers that they're cowards, they don't want to be conscious, and that all it is for their pockets, and they're just keeping it a popularity contest, you know, and you're saying it that it's not when you do it. But do you look at it as that it's unpopular to be the most vocal? Because you see, it's almost like the opposite. It's like when you speak out with against what's right, it's unpopular, but then you can have someone doing the most toxic thing on social media, saying the most outlandish thing, and people all follow them for it. Is that kind of where you think that's how the standards are now, where you're kind of unpopular if you're speaking for the right thing?
I think speaking out, like the most popular cause right now is freedom of speech. Everybody wants freedom of speech. Everyone wants to be against cancel culture. Everyone wants to be like, I have the right to say what I want to say in my opinion and blah, 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 blah. This focus on opinions. It's funny to me because opinions are like assholes. Everyone has one,
And they all
but
stink.
they all stink. But do you go around bragging about your asshole? No, you don't. So people bragging about the right to have an opinion in America, there are countries and places in the world where your freedom of speech is absolutely threatened. That's not happening here. And if it is happening here, it's definitely not happening to straight, rich, white males. These are people who are the top tier of society. These are the people who have the most rights in our society. And so this idea that people are like crying about wokeness or crying about progressiveness is really dangerous because being anti-woke means you're asleep.
Yeah.
Being against being aware means that you are a dumb motherfucker. I'm sorry to be cursing on your
You can
show. I don't
curse.
know. Okay, but like you have people who value ignorance and people who don't value education created sort of mob rule on social media. Like Trump said, he loves the poorly educated because the poorly educated allow themselves to be pulled in by the algorithm. When you go on, when you're not checking your sources and citing your sources, and you're going on YouTube and you like, you're watching a video and you don't see who is the person that made that video, and the video says one or two things you agree with, you're going to go down a rabbit hole. The algorithm is going to start showing you videos that give you confirmation bias for what you already think you believe. So you're not actually learning anything when you're like on YouTube all day researching and stuff. You're just getting like, you're just getting confirmation bias for a whole bunch of bullshit. And so I think it's very dangerous right now that people are very much being bullied into being whatever anti-woke is, or being bullied into being anti-progressive, or being bullied into thinking that because you are compassionate, that something's wrong with you. These people who are yelling about freedom of speech, they just don't want to get punched in the face. That's all, because freedom of speech comes with consequences, right? Like if you say something racist and I punch you in the face, I'm going to jail. You're not going to jail for being racist. It's not, your freedom of speech is very well protected by the police. The same people who yell about freedom of speech also be pro cop. It can't be both.
No, you're right, and I agree with you about everything, especially when you look at everyone running to YouTube for the sources. Because when I look at your work with Diamond D, where's the love? These whack questions. When you really go at the interviewers on that song, man, these whack questions get flat put back on them. Interviewers, they'd be like, "Describe yourself." I say, "This is your job," and you ascribe yourself. These dudes is lazy, and that's what we're living in now in society, because we're running to these streamers, we're running to these guys that really don't have the best interest of the black
I want to say
community.
this too, because people feel a way about YouTube. You know what I'm saying? People be like, yo, don't talk about my YouTube now. You know what I'm saying? Like, so I want to give a disclaimer and a caveat. Being independent is dope. Like having independent sources of news and information is dope, and the mainstream media often lies to us. So it's a good gut instinct to want to go to an independent source like YouTube. You know what I'm saying? Like, and if you're an independent thinker, you want to learn something on your own, you could take courses. You could learn how to like build a car on YouTube if you want. So it's like it can be used for good, but all I'm saying is do your research and cite your sources and check your sources if you're going to go the independent route.
And that's what you have to do. You have to make sure that you're going to the right sources, like you said, and with liberation too. And just when we look at air quotes, because I always say it, these Drake and a lot of these artists have a lot of power to make change, but they don't. And I mean, the blackface thing was very questionable, so I don't think Drake's gonna be making change. I could be wrong,
You
but
talking about Drake and blackface?
yeah, with the blackface photo, you saw
I
that?
think from what I did, just I think from what that what I remember, that was a couple of years ago. What I remember was he was in blackface as part of like this artistic project.
Okay.
Yeah, it wasn't like, I think it was like, I think Pusha T was kind of just trolling him with that one.
Okay, yeah, because I know the internet took that and ran crazy. Like Drake is really just, but when we look at these artists and they're afraid to put their views over hurting their pockets, like you said in air quotes. And when we look back at groups like Public Enemy, because I had this conversation with Dres and just how a lot of these racist white guys got into these record labels and are now dictating the sound. Why do you think that Public, because some of them were still in the label back then. Why do you think like Public Enemy was able to be with Def Jam and be so popular? And now we don't have that anymore in the mainstream. Why, what do you, when do you think it changed and why?
We have it. It's just a little different. The artists, we have all these wars between Drake and J. Cole and Kendrick right now. But truth be told, J. Cole and Kendrick are like the biggest top artists of our generation, besides Drake. Drake is the only one who might be bigger than them. And while Drake is not as, he doesn't delve into like the conscious aspect as much as a J. Cole or as much as Kendrick might. Drake does deal with music, does make music that's a little bit more heady than your average club banger. And so does J. Cole and definitely Kendrick. Kendrick out of the three is the most, I feel like, conscious out of the three. are the only ones selling out stadiums. The guys who have the club bangers, they not stadiums like, excuse me, like J. Cole or Kendrick or Drake. So I think it's we need to note that the positive is still here. You know what I'm saying? Like the people who do the positive, whether it's Chance the Rapper or, you know, it's like those are the ones we're really interested in. Now, as far as Public Enemy, that's about the audience. Too often, I feel like the onus is put on the rappers to be conscious. Like when something happens to the community, people rush the internet and be like, why aren't the rappers saying stuff? It's like, wait, how did it become the rapper's job to say stuff? The rappers are products of the community. So the community back then, when Public Enemy was out, there was a black cultural nationalist wave happening in America, if in the black film, in the black media, in academia, and in the streets. In the streets, we were selling books in the streets. I come from selling books in the streets. So there was a whole culture that supported that. So you didn't have just Public Enemy, but you had X-Clan and Poor Righteous Teachers and Queen Latifah and Native Tongues and Boogie Down Productions, and it was a whole wave. And so if people are asking, why can't we make another Self-Destruction or why can't we have another Public Enemy? Well, look at yourself and what are you doing? Are you a conscious consumer? Are you a conscious community member? What do you do in your own lifestyle to promote other artists? Or do you complain about Megan Thee Stallion and Cardi B lyric content, or do you support Rhapsody content? And I say this as a support of all three, but too often I see people go out their way to talk a lot of shit about what they don't like, but they never, ever, ever spend no time ever talking publicly about what they do like, or even supporting what they do like with their dollars.
No, that's real. That's real. You broke it down right there. And I think that we need more conversations like this because, you know, a lot of people kind of avoid the other side. Because that's the thing. Everyone's so closed-minded nowadays. It's either there's no conversation between people anymore. And that's the thing that has politics and just social media so separated nowadays because it's either you're on the left or you're on the right. There is no in-betweens anymore. It's crazy.
Yeah, I want to address the left and the right thing because a lot of people that's like a popular subject right now. Like a lot of people when they talk about politics, people speak about politics as if we're watching a TV show, as if we're watching a soap opera. It's like Gossip Girl or something. They're not really informed on the issues. They're just picking a team because everybody wants to be part of a gang, right? So everybody wants to feel a part of something. So which gang are you in, the left or right? And then for people who feel like they're like quote unquote free thinkers, they'd be like, well, I don't subscribe to the left or the right, and it's just two wings of the same bird. And I'm not, and you know what? For those people, for the so-called free thinkers, I'll say this. Too often we get caught up in Democrat versus Republican. A Democrat Republican is a very uniquely American political thing. It's if you know anything about politics, you know that the Democrats and the Republicans both overlap when it comes to like imperialism, corporatism. Both of them support the bombing of Palestine and Gaza and all that. So there's a lot of similarities. So if you're the type of person who's like, I don't subscribe to a Democrat or Republican, I feel that. I understand that. And the Democrats, the way that the Republicans are the right wing and are anti-gay and anti-black and anti-women and all that, that used to be the Democrats back in the days. And that's why people, when people say the Democrats started the KKK, because yes, the Democrats used to be the party that was the right wing party. And now in this era, the Democrats are more like the left wing party. But most Democrats are not leftist. All Republicans are right wingers, but most Democrats are not leftists. So when people get caught up in left or right, they're really talking about Democrats and Republicans. And what leftism in the history of the world has always been, has been people who resist the status quo, people who resist the elitism, people who resist the power dynamics and the oppression, people who are anti-slavery, people who are pro-black, people who are pro-women, people who do not discriminate against gay people, people who want the wealth to be distributed amongst the people instead of the wealth being centralized and kept in one place. That, in the history of politics, is the left. So we have to be careful when we get caught up because the right wing is very, very good. They're very, very good at getting people to believe that the right wing is the party of traditional values and the party of family values. If that were true, they would not support Donald Trump, a man who's a serial adulterer, been convicted of rape, you know, a man who's on trial for all types of crimes. They don't actually support traditional value
No, yeah,
and
it's
family
all,
values.
yeah. They're basically just hiding behind them because of just what he stands for. You know, they don't
Well,
really.
he stands for power. And they want power. And they know that Donald Trump will put in the judges that will support what they want, which is they're very anti-abortion, they're very anti-gay, they're very anti-having black books in schools. And they know that someone like Donald Trump, who hates anyone who's not rich, straight, white, or male, will support whatever policies that they're trying to push through.
Yeah. And it's crazy when you look at all the lyrics back in the day when you have Kool G Rap and Raekwon, a lot of the rappers speaking about Trump in their lyrics. And then you look at it years later, it's like, whoa, it was like a complete 360. He really fooled a lot of people. But then you have to look at the Central Park Five. It's like, how come a lot of people weren't really vocal about that and let this guy coming into all these parties? I used to party with Puff Daddy. You'd hear all these stories. It's like the
Yeah, I
Central
think
Park Five was huge.
I'm the same age as Central Park Five, and those are my guys, the Exonerated Five. Those are my guys. Shout out to the Exonerated Five. So that was a very real thing for me. Like I was affected. Like I remember going to the mall as a teenager and being told me and my friends we couldn't hang out because we was in a wolf pack and they thought we was gonna go wilding, and these are the terms that were used. And Donald Trump definitely was a racist back then when he put that ad in the New York Post calling for the execution. But Donald Trump was largely apolitical. He wasn't involving himself in politics. So even though that was like the Central Park Five thing was a very, very clear display of racism, people were forgiving or forgetful about that because Donald Trump was a socialite. He framed himself as a socialite. Donald Trump is someone who you see on Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous, and you want to go to his parties and whatnot. And when he did support politics, he supported the Clintons and he supported Democrats because he was in a Democratic city. But when he threw his, and so when you see people talking about Trump was never, a lot of people weren't aware of Trump's beliefs. They just saw Trump as a symbol for wealth and a symbol for opulence. So when you hear Trump being referenced in hip hop lyrics, like Guess Who's the Black Trump and all that, no one's talking about his politics. They just talk about he got the paper.
His
That's it.
status, yeah, his
The
money
status.
status,
And
yeah.
so when you go down the line from people who are good friends of his, like Russell Simmons, to people who had him on the album, like Method Man, when you go down the line, everybody in hip hop who shouted him out, almost 100% of them have denounced him since he's come out as a political candidate.
Yeah, no, they have. It's crazy, like you said. It was the status symbol, and we already know what happened there. But you mentioned Prince before at the beginning of the interview, and you were cool with Prince. House of Blues, you met him, and he was a fan of your work, and you just going out to meetings with him. And I remember there was one night, I believe, that he was telling someone, I was hearing the story, that you don't know what you're talking about, and it was something with the Bible, right?
Oh yeah, I've shared that story before. Prince is, people know Prince was a Jehovah's Witness, and Prince didn't drink or smoke. I mean, when I met him, that's where he was at. He was Jehovah's Witness. He didn't drink or smoke. He was very much about spirituality, very much about uplifting the people. And he would come to the clubs in LA. My wife at the time was DJing a lot of clubs, so that's how I got to meet him. She was DJing for him, DJ EQ. And he would come into club situations and want to have like real spiritual conversations. And there was one club situation in LA where he came, and after the club was over, he sat everybody around and we discussed the Bible. And so yeah, that's definitely the type of thing Prince was into.
Yeah. When was the last time you saw Prince?
Man, it had to be maybe I'm thinking oh, wow, it had to be a while ago. I think he did a show with Tribe Called Quest in Austin, Texas for South by Southwest. In 2012, 2013, or something like that.
Rest in peace. And he's another one. He was really, people should really follow his blueprint, because when you look at it, he was already kind of letting us know about the record deals and just everything with Emancipation, because that was an important album. That's kind of in relation to Liberation when you look at it, because he's speaking about it, and then him being the symbol and just him getting caught into all these bad deals. You know, that was kind of like, he was kind of like the originator and saying, you got to watch these deals.
Yeah, Prince was definitely the originator. Not just, he was independent business-wise, he was independent thinker. He was independent music-wise. He didn't need anybody in the studio. He can play everything, he could sing everything. And so he was the original first free thinker.
Yeah, and you are too as well, man. Because when we look at your history, your mother was an English professor, and then you go on. Because I'm from Connecticut, and me learning about your history, you went to
Oh, you're
Cheshire, I
from
heard.
Connecticut? You're not mad at me? You still willing to do an interview with me?
Nah,
You from Connecticut?
yeah, I hate Connecticut, so I'm cool with
Oh,
it.
you hate Connecticut? All
Yeah.
right, this is what I want to do. I want you to take this clip I'm not on social media. Kick me off of
Yeah,
social
but we're
media.
gonna get into that. I wanted to, because I wanted to. Well, I'll ask you the question, but continue on.
All right, I want you to take the clip of you saying you hate Connecticut, and I want you to put it on your social media, and I want you to chop it up and have me be like, "Why do you hate Connecticut? I love Connecticut." Because people think I hate Connecticut, but here's my, and I'm gonna go out on a limb here. I think that the people who got mad at me for the joke that I made about Connecticut on my podcast, I mean, these guys made a bunch of diss records about me. They got really in their feelings, got really mad over a joke I made. I feel like that was all projection. I feel like, because people in Connecticut, the people in Connecticut who got mad at me for making that joke, I feel like they really deep down, they the ones that hate Connecticut. I don't hate Connecticut.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it is too because we don't have too many success stories out of here. We got Chris Webby, and we had a couple
Yeah,
guys
Chris
come out of
Webby,
here.
he's a fucking dick.
Yeah. Oh,
He's
you
a
don't like
fucking
Chris?
dick. So look. I don't, you said you were going to get into it. Did you know about all of this that I'm talking about?
Very little about the Connecticut stuff. You're kind of
Right.
tapping me into this. Yeah.
Okay, so first of all, shout out to Connecticut. I went to boarding school in Connecticut. Have friends in Connecticut, family in Connecticut. Connecticut, Toad's Place is amazing.
Oh yeah,
It's
New Haven.
one of the staples of my career. Just Blaze is from New Jersey. And I had Just Blaze on People's Party. And we were having a discussion about how New Yorkers could be very elitist. Like New Yorkers be like
Yeah.
on some, like, if you're not from New York, fuck you. And so Jess was like, we were having like a playful back and forth, and I was like trying to exemplify the attitude of an elitist New Yorker. And I was like, at the end of it, I was like, yeah, fuck Connecticut. But I did it like as an aside, like I was in character. But there's a lot of rappers in Connecticut who felt like I was actually saying fuck Connecticut, which is why would I say that's so stupid to say. And so even when I explained to them, I'm like, well, I'm just joking. They was like, well, it's not funny. And it's like, I'm like, all right, nigga, if you think a joke's don't funny, it's not funny, then don't laugh. You know what I'm saying? Don't laugh at the joke. But this whole idea that y'all think that I'm on this anti-Connecticut crusade, y'all gonna make diss records and oh, he's not welcome in the city. I'm welcome anywhere I go, first of all. But so Chris Webby is an artist from Connecticut who I have not one record, but a couple of records with. And I've never actually, maybe I've met Chris Webby, maybe I haven't, I don't recall it. But I did the records through a mutual friend we had. This guy had a relationship with Chris Webby, had a relationship with me, and he put us on two songs together. I think that's it. Maybe that was just for one song. I don't know. But Chris Webby injected himself in the conversation, and when he got in, he had my back. And he first got in, he said, yeah, man, even I'd be like, fuck Connecticut sometimes. And that's what he wrote. And so because he did that, people in Connecticut got mad at him. Like, yo, how are you gonna have his back and how are you gonna say this? He got so much pressure from people in his circle for supporting me that he kind of came back and was like, and tried to check me. He was like, actually, Kweli, now I feel like you, because I was still kind of arguing with these people. Oh, actually, I feel like you're going too far and this and that. It's like, bro, don't be mad at me because you be flip-flopping. Don't be mad at me because and for you to be a white kid in hip hop and to be coming at me any type of way sideways because you a flip flopper, bro, you got to know your place. And I say that with all due respect to all the white kids in hip hop who, because I, a lot of people talk about white kids in hip hop being guests in the culture, right? I don't use that term because I feel like if you bout this culture, you in this culture, you're not a guest. But I get why people say that, right? I get why Lord Jamar would say that. You know what I'm saying? But I don't consider R.A. the Rugged Man a guest in hip hop culture. I don't consider Mac Miller a guest in hip hop culture. People like that. I don't consider Eminem a guest in hip hop culture. I consider them part of hip hop culture. But if you come at me because you feel in a way about how you, because you from Connecticut, you coming at me sideways, you're definitely a guest. And it's not because of your whiteness.
Oh man.
But shout out to Chris Webby.
Oh man, I love Chris Webby. It's all love from my end because he's been on my show and he's a supporter of mine and just paving the way for people out of Connecticut. But this is news to me, just dropping. But you have every right to feel the way that you do, Taleb, and just everything you've done for hip hop. And yeah, Connecticut, I'm not with it. Even though I'm here, I'm not here for long. Don't worry. So I'm on the type of time you are. And people should be going at Joe Rogan more because he's dissing Connecticut and he's from New Jersey. I mean, really?
Yeah, I so I it's funny that you said that because now because people think I'm in the Disconnecticut crew, I've now heard about everyone who's ever Disconnecticut ever.
Yeah, I
Like
can't stand Joe
people.
Rogan. Especially with the N-word stuff that he's done. I'm good on Joe Rogan. He can have a seat.
Yeah, Joe Rogan is very polarizing, and I have opinions. As Joe Rogan is difficult for me because I'm adjacent to him because he's friends with a lot of my friends, and I hang out with, I've hung out with him and spent time, and I've talked to him about what you just said to the N-word thing. I've spoken to him about it, and I don't agree with a lot of things he does. I feel like a lot of things he does is dangerous. But then I'll see a clip of him saying something I agree with and pushing back against somebody. He's very complicated. I think I agree with like 30% of what he says, and I disagree with like 70% of it. Maybe 60, 40, I don't know.
No, it is. It's crazy just with everything with him, and just but you've always been vocal because I remember when you interviewed DMC on your show. Because when I look at it, like Gene Simmons and these guys that don't want hip hop artists in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, you said it. You said fuck Gene Simmons, and I applaud you for that because we need that. Because who are these guys that say that? Because when we look at it. I know Benzino's catching a lot of flack right now with him dissing Eminem again with Rap Elvis, but rock and roll was a black thing. It was. And then Elvis came, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, Elvis is the savior of rock. He's the face of rock. It's a white thing now. And you got guys like Gene Simmons that followed in the footsteps there, and they're just like, they're looking at hip hop artists as guests. And hip hop, and it is the new rock and roll when you really look at it. Hip hop is the new rock and roll.
Shout out to Tropical Quest, recent inductees into Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I saw that. Shout out to the Mos Def and you, Yasin. You guys got to get in there for Black Star. I want to
Oh
see you
no, we
guys
kind of
make it.
indie. We're still kind of underground. You know, we don't have the record sales of, we have the respect, but I don't, we don't have that's the sales that certain of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame people have.
Man, no, I'm sure someday it'll happen. I have faith because with the
Okay.
hip hop, yeah, I have faith it'll happen because you guys are
Okay.
so big in your own right. I know you're underground, but it's like. You're so mainstream, and people used to say that to you because you used to hang out with everybody so much and work with everyone. I heard you say this, and now you're kind of a little bit more secluded. Why do you think as time has gone by, you are less kind of out in the open and just being with people, but even as a host of your own show too?
One, just time catches up with you. Like I said, I'm a grandfather now. You know,
Yeah.
that so it's like I have to. I is this something a grandfather would do? I don't know. Because should be grandfathers be in the same club as everybody else? I don't know. But I think you grow older and your priorities shift and spending time with family becomes more important. And self-care becomes important. And yeah, I'm more efficient. I try to streamline now. I try to be more efficient now. But yes, I do have a history of being everywhere, being at every event, every club, working with every artist. That's definitely what I've done.
Yeah, it Pasanoose, because he was the one that he's still your idol. You looked up to De La Soul. That was the main ones right there. But I love how he redirected you where to go. You eventually end up into a lobby, and MC Search is there. And this is when the Gas Face was like the biggest record in the city at the time. But Tragedy Gaddafi was there that night, and you've proclaimed him to be the first rapper to really famous rapper to really accept you. And he's given you some important advice that night. What's the most important advice that he gave you that night that you can remember? That still rings true to this day.
I don't know if I remember the advice and the actual conversation as much as I remember the interaction and the fact that he spent time talking with me and building with me and showing me love, even though he didn't know me from Adam. I was just some kid on the street. And so it just kind of shows you where hip hop was at the time. It was like he was a superstar to me, because I saw him in Video Music Box. But he didn't act that way towards me because I was a participant in hip hop. He treated me like an equal, and that was very important for my development.
Yeah. And you've been doing your thing because Jessica Rosenblum, that's you started working with her with Funk Flex. You were at all these clubs, so you kind of remember all these times when Treacherous was on stage, checking De La Soul. So you remember all these iconic
Oh man,
moments.
you bringing why you bringing up old shit?
Yeah. It's your history, man. It's just amazing me to see your
Shout out to
journey.
Naughty by Nature and De La Soul.
Yeah, and because you've been all over the place, man. Connecticut, we mentioned, and then Cincinnati, you eventually get to. But is that right? You were hitchhiking to LA at a time back in 1995?
I didn't hitchhike to LA. I took a Greyhound to LA.
Took a Greyhound to LA.
Yeah, I did. 1995. I wanted to see the Good Life Cafe. You know, I want to see The weed woman, weather and weed, as the song goes.
From there, because you get to LA, well, we look at Doom because that was as people say, that was your debut. How did you get to Cincinnati from being in New York and then out in LA? So kind of walk me through to the journey to Cincinnati because that's where you wake up.
Yeah, Cincinnati. I had a roommate named Omar. I had a roommate named Divine. He had a good friend named Omari who was from Cincinnati, and when I was in NYU, and he came to stay with us. And so Omari was very much into hip hop, big hip hop head. He was in New York because New York was like the mecca of hip hop, and we became really good friends. And he told me about Cincinnati and Mood and high tech and what was going on out there. And so New York wasn't really working for me. I dropped out of college. I had a job. I didn't care with books, but I didn't. It was tough. It was tough. Did I have a baby on the way yet? No, I didn't have a baby on the way, but baby was coming soon. And so I went out. I took a trip to visit Omari in Cincinnati, and that's where I met the Mood dudes and high tech, and it was on and popping from there.
And you had a close relationship, not even just to make the correlation with MF Doom. Did you know him when he was Zev Love X with KMD? Because you were around Search at that time, especially with the Lobby story that I brought up earlier. So did you know him before he was Doom?
I didn't know Zev Love X and Sub Rock and them and Onyx and them. I was a fan of KMD. I was a fan of all the whole God Squad, the whole like Hebrew Israel and Ansar community, Hebrew Israelites overlap with the God bodies and all that. I met Doom, reinvented himself as Doom after Sub Rock passed away, rest in peace. And so I saw Doom in the era of like the Fat Beats era when Bobito had fondled him. I would see Doom around at shows, but we didn't really have a relationship. It's when like Gas Draws and all the Scooby-Doo stuff was, we didn't have a relationship. When did I develop a relationship with Doom? I developed a relationship with Doom because he went on tour with me. They opened for me on tour. I feel like we became friends on that tour. That was around the time, it had to be like when Mad Villain, around the time Mad Villain dropped, Doom toured with me and he was on my tour bus with me and we toured together for a month and went city to city. And I asked him to be on that song that, on Right About, he's on Right About Now. That's 2005. So it had to be like 2004 that I was hanging out with Doom.
Rest in peace to him too, another legend, and just everything that he did and his accomplishments, and just being his own character in hip hop. And another character when we look at DMX and his and your interview with him just really struck a nerve with a lot of people because that's when you found out that he was basically tricked by a friend to the point where he was addicted to crack at such a young age. And it's just a sad story to learn about, that you can't trust people.
That was a tough, interview for me. DMX is a good friend of mine. And DMX always reached out and always checked on me and made sure I was good when I would see him out. And so that whole weekend, it was a bittersweet weekend because he did a show in Cincinnati, and then I was in Yellow Springs. It was during the pandemic, where Chappelle. And DMX said, "I'm gonna pull up," and he pulled up. He brought crab legs, and we had a great time. But yeah, he got really emotional in that interview, and then the dude he was talking about started like commenting on my Instagram page back when I had Instagram. He was like, "No, it didn't go down like that. You need to interview me." And I was like, "No, I don't." You know what I'm saying? Like, I need to interview DMX, and that's it. But yeah, rest in peace to DMX.
Rest in peace. I know that you—that's one of the artists that you wanted to do a record with, and you talked with him about it, but it just never came to fruition.
I never got to do a record with X. That would have been dope.
And for sure. And then I know you brought up Eminem earlier because it was the whole guest talk, but he was going to be open. He opened up for you guys in Brooklyn, and this is when the Rolling Stone cover came out. And this was like the first rap superstar to get on that cover. And you've seen Eminem really just destroy guys that would come up to him for freestyles. And he would be the one that would be out there just willing to be out there and put himself on the front line. And he would tear dudes down.
Yeah, shout out to Eminem. Shout out to Green Lantern because it was actually an event called Brooklyn, Vermont. It was in Vermont that Eminem opened, and he didn't open for us. We opened for him. It
You
was
open for
crazy
him? Wow. Okay.
because it was like he was scheduled to open for us. It was like Eminem, Blackstar, but the Rolling Stone thing had just dropped, and so the promoter came to us. He was like, yo, the crowd is really crazy about Eminem right now. Can he go on after y'all? And that was like a moment in my career. I was like, oh wow, okay. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is about to blow up. But I met Green Lantern that day. He DJ'd that event, and I actually spoke to him earlier today. I saw Eminem around that time. You know, it was the type of thing where it's like a nod thing. It was like, I had this type of relationship. What up? You know what I'm saying? And it's like throughout my career, I've had no relationship with Eminem. I would see him. I've seen Eminem like backstage at award shows, and it's like, what up? You know what I'm saying? And there's a book. I forget the author, but I actually wrote the foreword to a book about Eminem. But I actually never had a conversation with Eminem until about 2 weeks ago. I was with Dave Chappelle, and Eminem called him, and I was like, put me on the phone with Eminem. And it was the first conversation I had with Eminem, and it was really dope. You know, shout out to Eminem.
Is there anything you can reveal that you guys talked about? You want to share or?
Oh no, we were just, showing each other love. I was like, yo, you're an icon, you're important to the culture. He's like, no, you. I'm like, no, you. He's like, no, you. I'm like, no, you. It was like that type of conversation.
It was like that Spider-Man meme that goes around on Twitter.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But speaking of social media, because you're not on there, but how does it feel to just be off of that now where you can just live life? And do you think it's really necessary for artists to have social media? Because I feel as though if you're really a go-getter, you're still going to try to make it in the organic way. You're still going to make it happen without it.
Hey man, it fucking sucks. No, I'm just playing. No, so here's the real. Here's the real about social media. I am an anti-celebrity. The way that I carry myself, I don't act like people always, when I was on social media, Twitter and Instagram, people's main complaint about my interaction and engagement was, why are you always commenting on everything? Why are you on there so much? You don't act, no other celebrities do this, no other famous people do this. That's right. Because I don't behave like a famous person. I behave like someone who's not famous. And I think that people who are not famous, if people were coming for them, like how people come for me, they would respond the way that I responded. The way that when I see all these podcasts and everybody got beef and everyone's coming at each other, I'm like, man, all y'all sound like me on Twitter 10 years ago. It just took y'all 10 years to realize that you have to defend yourself. You know what I'm saying? I saw Carlos Mencia do an interview, and he famously was accused of stealing jokes, and it kind of ruined his career. People think of Carlos Mencia as a joke thief. And I saw an interview with him, and someone said, "What's the one regret that you have?" He said, "The one regret I have is that I didn't go on social media and defend myself and stand up for myself when people were saying all these things." And I was like, "That's what I'm talking about." We're in an era where it's like we used to be. You get in controversy, you be quiet. But no, people take the narrative and they run with it because, as we were talking about earlier, the algorithm now, right? People are not getting their news from actual reputable sources. So people will take any rumor and just run with it. Now, I do have FOMO sometimes, especially when in my group chats that I'm in various group chats and people post Instagram links and I got to go to the website and put the link in and I can't go on the app. And so I'm like, oh man. So sometimes I get FOMO, like I'm missing out on a conversation. But to your point, God don't want me to be on social media. And I've been able to have, I was already living a full life, whether I was on social media or not, but my life has gotten even fuller now that I'm on it. And when I look at what do kids say these days? The ops. When I look at my ops crashing out, that's another thing the kids say these days, crashing out. But when I look at my ops crashing out, I'm like, yo, God wanted me to see these motherfuckers crashing out. There's a lot of people who talk shit about me, a lot of people who have problems with me that I sit back and watch now are just crashing out on social media. And I'm like, oh, okay. I needed to just be taken away from that to see that these people are gonna crash out whether I speak up about them or not.
No, that's true. And I agree with how you went at people, because people, you have to stick up for yourself, and that's just who you are. You're gonna do that. So a lot of people are
Yeah, well,
critical of
Instagram
that.
doesn't agree, and these people, it's because I am the anti-celebrity. Like, I'm not welcome on social media. My personality and how I am is not conducive to social media, and that's just something that I've had to accept.
Yeah, well, I mean, when we look at your collaborator with Get 'Em High and just all the beats that he produced for you, and just Kanye West, because he's been a topic of controversy with just everything recently, and then the Vultures album. I wanted to take it back to the Genius documentary, because when you watched it, and I remember hearing your reaction, because it was like you remembered it, but it was because you had so much other stuff going on. I heard you describe it as like you just couldn't really remember it at vividly. So, because you knew Kanye had it, especially when you found out he was producing for Beanie Siegel and Jermaine Dupri, and then eventually him working with you. He had this whole outline with the college dropout, late registration. He played you Jesus Walks early on and Hey Mama.
It's crazy because I'm DJing a vinyl party tonight, right? And so I don't know if you look around, I'm like getting my crates together, right? And when does this interview come out?
This interview comes out this Monday.
Okay, yeah, I'm DJing a vinyl party tonight, so this party will happen. But it's crazy because I'm going through all this old vinyl, and I got all these vinyl records of early Kanye West stuff, like niggas want to hear that weak shit no more with the record with Old Dirty Bastard, and just stuff that's never come out. I have on vinyl, and I have a vinyl copy of Jesus Walks from before College Dropout came out. And not Jesus Walks, Hey Mama from before college. And Hey Mama was on the third album, right?
Hey, Ma.
Or it's the
Yeah.
second album.
Or is the second at late registration?
It's on late registration.
Yeah,
So
yeah.
I have a vinyl copy of Hey Mama from like 5 years before late registration dropped. Like all these people were just bootlegging that Kanye shit back in the days, I think.
Yeah, no, they definitely were. Now, what would you, because Get 'Em High, it's just, that's probably, and next to Through the Wire is my favorite song off the album. So what was that, if you can walk me through that recording session with Kanye? If you can walk us through that one.
By the time he was doing College Dropout, Kanye was a huge international superstar. And I was working on Beautiful Struggle, and I was really struggling to get Kanye West in the studio to work on Beautiful Struggle with me because he was just so in demand. And so one point he came to the studio, he was like, he had a bunch of stuff going on, he was rushed. And he was like, yo, I'll just make a beat for you right now on the spot. And I was like, no, I need one of them bangers that you spent time. Play me the Jay-Z folder, bro. Like, don't just make some shit. You know what I'm saying? He said, now watch this. And I watched him in my session. He made the beat for Get 'Em High in like 10, 15 minutes. And he said, yo, the hook is, don't your motherfucking hands get 'em high. And I watched him do that on the spot. And I was like, so this is a song about smoking weed? And Beautiful Struggle, if you listen to it, that's not really the subject matter on that album. That's not where my head was at. Like, I wasn't like, I don't want to do a song about throw your hands in the air, we getting high. Like, that seems like lowbrow to me. You got something else. And so he gave me the beat for I Try, which was going to be a John Legend song. And John Legend was singing the hook, I Try. But I already had John Legend on my album singing Around My Way. So I was like, okay, I'm going to take John Legend off. I'm going to put Mary J. Blige on it. And that's how that record happened. But then a couple months later, he's like, yo, remember that beat I made in the session? I was like, yeah. He was like, would you rap on it for College Dropout? I'm like, well, yeah, I'll get him high on your album. You know what I'm saying? I just didn't want to put it on my album. So I was on a tour bus in Europe. And where was I? I was in Denmark. And I found a studio in Denmark and I recorded my verse and I sent it to him. And it was like I had one day to get it to him. It was in December and the album came out in January or February, I think. And when the album came out, I was on tour and I didn't hear the final mix. I bought the album from Target on the road and I listened to the album when I got to Get 'Em High. My vocals, you know how you fly vocals on a beat? My vocals have flown in a bar later than where I actually laid the vocals. So I was very upset. And I called Kanye. I was like, yo, how could you do this to me? You got me sounding like I can't rap. I'm sounding all off beat. He's like, yo, I like it. People seem to like it. I didn't. He apologized. He was like, I didn't know I did that, but it sounds good to me. And I called Common, and I thought Common's verse was off beat because of how I thought he came in after me. So I called Common, like, yeah, Kanye flew my verse. He said, my verse is on beat. So I was like, oh man, it's just me. But people kept coming up to me telling me how much they liked that song, how much they liked my verse. And so I had to just accept it that it was a beautiful mistake.
No, thank you for sharing that story because that's, like I said, next to Through the Wire, that's my favorite song off of the album. And just,
Yeah. Now Kanye's a musical genius. For him to see, for him to, I watched him make that beat. He said, here's the hook. I was like, nope. He flew my verse in wrong. I was like, nope. And still, people love that song.
Unbelievable. I mean, and you got classics with quality eardrum. What is your favorite album that you've done? When you look at it, what's the one that you really cherish the most? Because I mean, Mos Def and Talib Kweli or Black Star, that's the one that set it all off. But is it a solo album? What's that one that you really look to?
Albums are like children, so it's hard to say which one is better and which one you like the best. But I think if I'm going to suggest an album for people who are not fans of mine, who have never heard my work, I feel like Eardrum is my most comprehensive album. It's my biggest album. It's my best-selling album. It's the album that did perform the best on the charts. It has over 20 songs on it, and it's got Madlib on it. It's got Roy Ayers on it. It's got Kanye on it. It's got will.i.am on it. It's got Justin Timberlake on it. It's got Jean Grey, KRS-One, Pete Rock. It's such a comprehensive piece of work, and it really encapsulates what I do as an artist.
No, it does. And it's a classic solo right there. And we got Liberation 2. You got to make sure people that are tuned in that are listening to this right now. What's the future for Javoti right now? Because this is your own label that you set up. What's the future? How are you looking to expand this from here?
I'm working on a bunch of different things. I have an album with Bun B I'm working on. I have an album with Large Professor I'm working on. I have an album with J. Rawls I'm working on. I don't know which one is going to come out first, but that's where Djibouti's at. Jessica Caremore and Stephanie Christian have an album, We Are Scorpio, which is like rock and roll poetry. We're dropping in a couple of months, about 2 months. I'm very, very excited about that. I'm working with an artist named Celine. I'm very excited about her project. And of course, Nico is. Shout out to Nico Iz. Nico's dropping records with Henry Dyer every month. Nico has a new record coming out. Working on new music with Nico. My children, of course, Diani's project, Dion, Amani Fela, he's got some new stuff coming. Yeah, that's what it is.
I want to see some more work with you and Diamond D, because with Gotham and On Mamas and just Where's the Love that I mentioned earlier off of the Dime piece, you guys are really a dynamic duo. And he was always kind of a mentor for you. And then when he pulled up to do the People's Party, this is how kind of Gotham came together. He was sending you beats and you
Yo,
were
man, I
listening.
gotta say, man, you are doing a good fucking job. Like, I do a lot of interviews. I haven't done an interview in a long time, actually, but this is a long form interview, so of course you had to do just a little bit of research. But I could tell it's not just the research, it's like a genuine love for the culture. And you know shit about me that people don't know. And it's like you either read my whole book or seen every interview or like something you did, like you were very prepared for this interview.
Thank you. No, I love hip hop, man. It's my life. You know, everything that I do is in hip hop. And just, you know, thank you. That means a lot to me, that what you just saying that. And I really take what I do seriously and whoever is on my platform very seriously. And that's why you're here today. And just, it wouldn't have happened if I didn't do my job. And
But you're right. You're right about because what I said that just now because you picked up on something very important about me and Diamond D. It wasn't just an album. It's a long relationship. And you're right. I take some time for granted how much Diamond has been there for me from the beginning of my career and really mentored me and really shown the love to me. And I'm blessed to because of my relationship with High Tech. I came in the game working with High Tech because of how dope High Tech is. I immediately got respected by the best producers. So because I got to work with High Tech, I got to work with Dilla and Madlib and Diamond D and Knife Wonder. And now I'm working with Large Professor. And it's like, and I've done work with Q-Tip. And it's like, I've gotten to work with Kanye West, some of the best producers to ever do it. So I feel very, very blessed.
yeah, and like I said with Diamond D, man, we got to get Gotham 2 on the way, or even just a different product. Like I said, I think you guys are a dynamic duo for sure. And
Yeah, I've recorded like three or four songs for a new Gotham.
ooh,
But I have to really focus on that. The first Gotham I did in one night. So it was like you mentioned like for you to know that it's because of the People's Party was impressive. Like I did those records the night before we did People's Party. Cause I wanted to play him some shit,
and you were playing, I know you were playing Stunts, Blunts, and Hip Hop too. You were going back to his records to get the inspiration to put into the album, which was very creative.
Here's the deal. When I was recording, so I did Gotham in one night. And here's my cheat code. And I said this to both Ray and Ghost because they needed to know this. But I was like, okay, I'm gonna write this album in one night. but it still has to be like feel classic. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a classic album and I'm going to sort of do my own interpretation of the flows and the styles on that album. So I listened to Cuban Links over and over again. And what I did was I took the Diamond D beats and I matched them the BPMs of beats that were on Cuban Links. And so whatever beats that were matched to BPM, that's the flow I would use on that song. So I didn't take any words or bars, but I definitely listened to what Ray and Ghost and the different vocal inflections and tones. So when you hear like Sons of Gotham, that's like a Ghostface Killah tone, the way that I'm rhyming. And On Mamas is more like a more Raekwon tone. You know what I'm saying? Like, so it was like I was really inspired by the way that they approached RZA's production on that album. And that's sort of my cheat code to how I got Gotham done so quickly. I was just taking the containers of the flows and putting myself in that.
That's so amazing, and that really speaks to your creative genius when it comes to hip hop and just your songwriting abilities. Because when I look at it, and when I look at your interview with like The Game, and you look at all these artists that you've interviewed, just to see and just hearing you hear how much of a fan you are of hip hop, where you draw inspiration from other artists that are coming out in a similar time period as you, and you're trying to pay homage to them and bring it into your own style. And that's something that I've heard Game speak about and just you speak here about tonight. And it's crazy because you wouldn't think that artists would be that humble to admit that. A lot of them have a lot of big egos and they're like, oh yeah, this is just my work. But it's crazy to see that you guys are students of the game like that. And
You know, the best artists are the ones who do that. The best artists take everything and incorporate it, and we all learn from each other. We're a community.
yeah. And you've been, man, you've been doing it for years now. Because you're partner with Yasiin Bey. I'm surprised you haven't wanted to kind of get into more of the movie space because he used to do the commercials and the auditions. And that's how you guys kind of used to remember seeing him in the park. And then you guys started out solo artists and you guys came together in 1997. We know that with Mos Def and Talib Kweli, Black Star. But I'm surprised you don't want to get more into the movie and TV space.
Who told you I did?
Oh, because I really,
Why
no one told me that, but I'm trying to, I
you
want to
gotta
see, because you have
stretch?
such a
You want to show me
personality. I want to see you more in movies and stuff like that.
something? Yeah, I did. I shout out to Yasiin and Common, and even Black Thought has gotten into that space. I did. I went on a bunch of auditions and I tried it, but that's hard. It's hard to do.
Yeah.
You have to dedicate your whole life to that. And Yasiin did that before he was blew up in music. He dedicated a large portion of his life to that. When Common got in movies, he kind of like took off from music to do that. I was never willing to take that much time off from music, to be away from the music, to really dedicate the time it takes to really master that.
Hip hop today, we talked about earlier. Who is someone that really impresses you that's coming up? Because I know you're getting the you're scouting artists out there for your own label and stuff. Who do you really believe in as far as when we talk about the lyrical hip hop, which is the true art form?
I really like Nico Iz, which is why I work with him a lot. And my kids, they inspire me the most. But I like a lot of new stuff. I mean, I find myself listening to Mac Hami a lot, and find myself listening to Rhapsody a lot, and of course, the whole Griselda is super dope. Rock Marcy.
Yeah.
These are people who I'm inspired by like right now.
No, and I could tell the thing I
But
always
these
try
aren't new
for.
guys, right? Like these guys are my age, you know what I'm saying? They just
Yeah, exactly.
still fresh.
Yeah, and that's another thing, the ageism in hip hop, it's got to stop. That's why when we look at Liberation 2, we really have to dissect this, because when we look at rock and roll, people will still go for a Rolling Stones album or a Rolling Stones concert. But for rap, we always shelve our legends for some reason. I don't know why that is, but
Well, hip hop is a focus on new and fresh, and old people are not new and fresh, and that's what it is. But hip hop has to grow up at some point.
Oh, I agree. And yeah, I like to say a lot of new artists are new and stale, but then people will say I'm a hater, but
Yeah,
yeah,
well, it's possible to be new and stale.
it is. It's great. It's unbelievable, and just everything that you've accomplished, man, and just the albums. And I always strive, because I say it, I said, where are the Get Rich or Die Tryin's, where are the Country Grammars, and where are
Man, I
those?
just bought Get Rich or Die Tryin' on vinyl so I could play at the club tonight. That
What
vinyl.
club are you at again?
It's New Blue. You said
Blue.
this comes out on Monday.
Comes out on Monday, yeah.
So on Monday night, if you're in New York City, I'm going to be in New Blue again. Ray Angry, producer, piano player extraordinaire. He does a great party on Mondays at New Blue called Producer Mondays, which is focused on improvisation and live music. It's live music, but I'm going to do a DJ set there as well. So if you're in New York City, come out to New Blue tonight as well.
Yeah, 100%. And Talib Kweli, I think we covered pretty much everything from the album, a lot of stories in your history, just what's real in society as far as politics and just everything going on in the world right now. Is there anything else you would love to let your fans know about Liberation 2? Anything else on the way that we didn't touch on tonight?
No, I just like to thank the fans and thank the people who support me. Thank the people who support me, whether I'm on social media or not. And thank the people who actually go out and buy the album. And Liberation 2 was in the top 10 all weekend when it came out, which was pleasant because it's like there's no real marketing and promotion behind it. So it just means the fans really are rocking with me and Madlib. And I'm very proud of Liberation 2. And it's an amazing album. Q-Tip's on it. Roy Ayers is on it. Michelle Degocello. Both my children, Guapole, Pink Sifu. It's an amazing piece of work. I'm very proud of it, and I hope people support it. And you can also get it on my Bandcamp as well if you want to support me directly.
Yeah, and make sure to go support that. And People's Party, you got some more coming soon?
Yeah, shout out to Jared Meyer from Up Rocks. He just rebought Up Rocks and acquired Hip Hop DX and Hip and People's Party has been on hiatus because they were going through that whole transition. So hopefully we'll see new episodes soon.
All right. Talib Kweli, thank you for coming on the show tonight, man. It was an honor. Thank you for all that you do for hip hop and journalism and activism.
Oh,
You're
thank you,
definitely,
man.
yeah, one of the greatest of all time for sure. And you have a lot more on the way. I know it's you're a
Yes.
grandfather now, but it doesn't look like it. And
Oh,
you're
thank you,
just,
brother.
it, yeah, and it's just getting started.
Yes, a shout out to Connecticut.
Yeah, shout out to Connecticut.
You gonna get some flack for saying you hate Connecticut. I'm letting you know.
Hey, well,
They
I'm gonna be out in a couple
Quavo and Bass
months.
is gonna make a diss record about you. Watch.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna be out in a couple months, so they'll have to follow me to the West Coast.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, Talib Kweli. Anytime you would love to come back on the show, you're always welcome too. Anytime you got some upcoming material, love to have you back on.
Thank you, brother.
You already know, man. Take care, enjoy the rest of your night. Enjoy the club.
All right, peace.
Peace out.